The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check out ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. I'm actually giving away 5 free PMags on there in a little while, so good to check out the Facebook page. Anyway, co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Jim Beatty and Andy Ulrich. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
It's a great evening.
Excellent.
Always so very excited to be here. Tonight's guest is one of the top shooters there is, police officer and competition shooter Robert Vogel. Robert has been the overall winner of more than 70 state, national, and world championship matches. In other words, he's really good at hitting what he wants to hit very fast. I'm actually going to be going up and taking some private instruction from Mr. Vogel at the beginning of September, and generally one of the highest recommendations I can give is spending my own money to go and work with somebody. So there you go. This will be a really cool show. I will get to Mr. Vogel in just a minute. I just wanted to make everyone aware of some cool things going on in Ohio, or at least a cool thing going on in Ohio. The 10th annual Ohioans for Concealed Carry Party in the Park is going to be Sunday, August 11th, between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. at Liberty Park in Columbus. That's yes. Outside of Columbus, yeah. Isn't it? Somewhere there. I went last year, and it was really, really fun time. There's food, and I believe Kyle's Gun Shop is giving away some things, as are some other people this year. So I would go check that out. You can find out more about that at ohioccw.org. Tickets are $19 for one person. Then you get a break if you buy more than one at a time. So
all you can eat. And
no, yeah, it's a great time.
Drinks and
it's always kind of nice to hang out with some really cool, semi-like-minded people. Obviously, we all disagree a little bit on certain things, but I've always had fun. So, but anyway, recently I've kind of noticed a trend. And the trend is the next great thing, or the new magic bullet, or that holster that will hide the gun just a little bit better. You know, and gear is really cool. Some of it's really sexy. Most of it's fun to play with. At the end of the day, however, the only thing that is going to end a fight, if you find yourself in one, is going to be the swift application of bullets into a target that is trying its best to A, not get shot, and B, kill you or harm you greatly. So what I'm trying to say is, before you worry about the next great thing or the new magic bullet — there aren't any magic bullets, by the way, as much as I would like for there to be, there are not. Some of them work better than others, but honestly, they all probably will do the trick. Maybe you should be concerned about actually hitting what you're aiming at.
No.
So, and that's going to be kind of the focus on tonight's show, is actually shooting a little bit better and talking with someone that shoots extremely well. And if you've not seen any videos of Mr. Vogel shooting, you should get on YouTube and look him up. He's all over the place, and he does some what I would consider to be inhuman things if I hadn't seen him do it, and some other folks that are at his caliber. So going back to it, we'll get Robert on the line here really quick, but the reason why I say accuracy is so important and putting bullets where you want to put them is so important, is there's really two things that stop a fight if we get rid of psychological stops. And that's going to be someone loses blood or you destroy the central nervous system. And I'll do a show about this at some point. I'm not going to do it tonight. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that the targets we're aiming at are incredibly small, much smaller than you would like to think if you go and look at the blue man silhouette and, hey, I put bullets in the blue. Well, okay, that's good. So placement is key, and without further ado, I will get Mr. Vogel on the line so he can get a little bit more into how we shoot better and things like that. But joining us this evening, Mr. Robert Vogel. Robert, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, hi, John. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So if you don't mind, can you just give everybody a little bit of your background and we'll go from there?
Sure. You know, I was raised in a rural place in Ohio on a farm out in the country. So kind of growing up, I didn't just really couldn't get it down much so I could drive. So shooting and hunting was just a way of life earlier on. You know, growing up, probably hunting by myself at age 9 or 10 or whatnot. And just really, I think when I was 15, I really fell in love with handguns. And that's about the time I decided to pursue being a police officer. And so I really started shooting handguns a lot since about 15 and went into the academy right out of high school, the police academy. And at the same time, I started competing. And just really, it all just kind of snowballed from there. And here I am about 12 years later. I'm not a full-time police officer anymore, but I've been shooting competitively for 12 years and got to the point where that's really what I'm doing for a living here the past year.
Right.
So that's my background.
Well, that's got to be really cool to be able to have your job be shooting. I haven't quite gotten there yet because I'm not that good, but
I can't complain too much.
Oh no! I mean, it sounds really cool, and I've followed your career a little bit, and it's certainly you do some things a little bit different than everyone else does, and we'll get to that obviously at the next segment. But so just I guess what I'm curious about you're obviously you know without trying to make you toot your own horn or anything, you're one of the best shooters in the world. I mean, there's not much argument there. I'm curious, do you think that level of marksmanship at speed under stress is a learnable skill, or is that just kind of something that, you know, you've got the tools in place because of birth and that's it?
It's a combination. I mean, when you really think about it, and just, you know, a lot of this is my opinion, it's a combination of things. Obviously, when it comes to anything, the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. So, you know, somebody that works hard, really devotes themselves, they're going to get better. On the other hand, is there a certain natural talent, natural ability that goes into that? I'm sure there is, just like in anything else. Just like kids when they're second, third grade, you know, some of the kids can throw a baseball better than other kids. It's just sheer natural ability, whether it's athletic ability, hand-eye coordination, the aptitude in certain things. I definitely think that comes into play. But I mean, it's definitely a balance. It's a balance. And I guess when you talk about trying to be the very best at something, yeah, I think those sorts of people out there, if you want to name off the top, 8, 10, 20 guys in the nation, in the world, I think all those guys have a lot of natural ability. And I think that's some of the reason that they were able to, you know, get where they are. But at the same time, they all work very hard because there's a lot of people with natural ability that don't put the effort in. It's got to be a combination of both of those. And that's just my opinion on it.
Well, that's why we have you on here tonight, is for your opinion. So we got to go to commercial here in a couple seconds. Real quick, just you kind of touched on this, but do you think people don't work hard enough at it?
Well, a lot of people don't. I think a lot of people have a hard time really devoting themselves to one thing. And maybe that's not always a healthy way of doing it. But a lot of people stretch themselves too thin. They might have 8 or 10 different hobbies, and they put a little bit into each one of them, whereas some people might have just 1 or 2, and they devote themselves to those 1 or 2, and they get a lot better at those 1 or 2 things. And I don't think you see a lot of people out there like that in this world.
Right, and I guess that makes a lot of sense. We'll talk a little bit more about that. When we come back, we'll be talking to Robert Vogel about how you can become a better shooter and some of the good habits that better shooters have. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Be wealthy and wise. The Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station. This is your exclusive home for Sean Hannity.
Fear, panic, rhetoric, hysteria.
Tomorrow at 3:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. We are talking with Mr. Robert Vogel, world champion shooter. So, Robert, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Excellent. Yep. So we were talking about whether or not people can get to be high-level shooters and what that entails. And you pointed out that some of it's natural ability and like anything else, some of it's hard work. Getting to the hard work thing, after people have learned how to safely handle a firearm where they've got the four rules down pat, what are some of the things that they should be working on first, do you think?
When you talk about defensive shooting, you know, whether it's competition or not, it's really sight alignment, carry control, and controlling the gun. So you know, without going on too long about it, side alignment and side alignment is really the easy part, I think. It's the trigger control and controlling the gun. You have to be able to break that shot without moving the gun. And it's human nature to fear loud explosions going off in front of our face. So much of the time, that's the problem people have. You know, they move that gun, they have that flinch or whatever you want to call that, just a little bit, move that gun a few millimeters, and it's inches off downrange.
Right.
And training yourself to not do that is one of the harder things to really master. You know, we got that, and then controlling the gun. When you look at a lot of other shooting sports, they don't care so much about what happens after the shot because they're not trying to get the second, third, fourth shot on there quickly. So how they grip the gun and control it is not as important, but what we do, it's very important. So, you know, the proper technique in that is one of the things we need to work on as well.
Right. And just for folks that aren't familiar, what you mainly compete in, I know, IDPA and USPSA, or...
Yeah, I compete IDPA and then USPSA and then IPSC, which is virtually very much the same as USPSA, just slightly different.
Right.
But that's what I should also shoot pro am. Again, it's all very, very similar, but it's pretty much down between those two or three things.
Yeah, just the shooting really fast, really accurately seems to be an important skill to master in whatever you're doing with a gun. So going back to, and you kind of brought this up, trigger control. That's a lot of that is a flinch that you develop based off of bad practice, I guess. What are some things that people can do to get over that?
Honestly, I'm a big believer in dry fire. I've always said that for years, and I teach that to my students. Because in live fire, I don't care who you are, the guns explode in front of your face, and it's distracting you, or it can distract you from these little minute things you could be doing wrong.
Right.
Moving the gun. And when you dry fire, if you do it correctly and you're mentally connected, you can train yourself time after time, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of reps of working that trigger, watching the sights stand where they need to be, and not move the gun when you're working the trigger. And it really is that simple. And it's, you know, you just do it so many times to the point where you almost can't do it wrong. So if I just had to put it on one thing, for me, that's what I would put it on. And in general, the harder recoiling of a gun that you shoot, the more apt you are to develop some kind of a flinch. You know, you should be shooting a .22 or, you know, even more of an open gun, something that doesn't have a lot of recoil to it. I don't find it as easy to develop a flinch. If you're shooting a Glock 40 that weighs 22 ounces and trying to control that and shoot it rapidly, that's a different story.
Right. And I've never been a fan of those. I know a lot of people like them a lot, but... I'm just a 40 hater, I guess. I'm sorry to everyone else.
I'm just not like, professional enough.
That's John. It. You know what? There's not anyone professional enough in this room to handle this Glock 40.
Wow.
I totally went there. Anyway, for those that don't know what I'm referencing, Google DEA agent shoots himself and enjoy the hilarity. So anyway, back to the show. Grip, you mentioned that too as far as recoil management. You're actually really well known for a method that you use to grip the gun, so much so that people have kind of started referring to it as the Vogel grip. Do you mind talking about that as much as you can? You know,
sure. You know, for one thing, as far as the actual technique involved, it was something that I really, I guess, just naturally came to do it and was doing it before I even realized it. You know, I shot STIs and some other guns for 3 or 4 years when I started competing, and then I ended up going to a Glock. And when I went to the Glock, just the ergonomics of the pistol, the longer trigger guard, the lack of some of the controls on the left side of the gun enabled me to get higher and further out toward the gun, and it really helped me control it. Because I look at it from a pure standpoint of physics, and you look at the muzzle where the bullet comes out of the gun, obviously. The closer you can get to that point, the higher and further forward on the gun, with any part of your hand, with any kind of pressure, the more you will control the gun.
Right.
And I just look at it very simple, just like that. If we could control it, I'd like to have a little lever right under the muzzler to hold on to. And if you could do that, you could control the gun.
Right.
We don't have that, so we have to adjust. So mine is I get higher, I get further forward on the gun than most people. I also have an inward torque. I'm torquing inward with both hands a little bit to get some of that side-to-side pressure on my gun and on my hand, and that helps keep that gun steady. I mean, to take a, we mentioned a 40 caliber Glock, some of it's got some snap to it. It's a lighter gun. It's a heavier caliber. To try to pull the trigger on that thing 6, 8, 10 times as fast as we can pull the trigger and not have it shift in our hands, you have to have a lot of things going right. And it's the way I came to do it. It works great for that, better than anything else I found. So
yeah. Now, is that why some people, and you, I'm one of them, but I'd like to get your take on it. Is that why some people will either modify the gun or add, like, skateboard tape or stipple the gun or something like that just to get a better gripping surface?
Yeah. Well, to get a better gripping and to keep the gun from slipping when you're shooting it. Mm-hmm. I actually do that with nines, with my 17-34s. I don't really do too much, but when I shoot a 40, when I shoot my 35s, 24s, I do some stippling to the gun just so in recoil I don't want that shifting in my hand at all. And it doesn't make a magical difference, but it gives you an edge, and you're looking for all the edge that you can get.
Right. So it's something there was a big conversation about whether or not to stipple guns or not recently, and I just wanted to get your take on it. So do you think, going back to your grip and how you do that, as far as – do you lock your wrist rolled forward when you're that far out on the gun, or, I mean,
do I want it? You say.
Do you lock your wrist fully extended forward, as far as like with your thumb pointing at the target?
Yeah, my thumb actually ends up kind of clamping down a little more, not so much pointing out, but it's more what I do with my fingers. And the reason you lock your wrist or you can't your wrist forward is so you can get it higher up on the gun. That meaty portion of your thumb behind your thumb, that's the portion that's really driving into the gun, putting pressure on the gun. And by locking your wrist forward, you get it up higher. If your wrist is straighter, you know, you're just going to be probably a quarter inch, half an inch, or even more lower on the gun, which is huge and when how that gun is tracking. So.
I think you're the first one I've actually heard explain it that way, because Jim and Andy and I are all kind of looking at each other like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So everyone's kind of nodding their head. I'm glad I asked. So
it's all about controlling the gun. I mean, I always tell people, all else equal, the less the gun moves in recoil, the better you're going to shoot. I mean, it's really that simple for
right.
me.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I guess just backtracking a little bit, and we talked about the fundamentals. Obviously, you do some training of individuals. You're familiar with other trainers. I don't want you to mention anyone specifically, but do you think the fundamentals are stressed enough by everyone that's teaching shooting, or is it something that's kind of fallen out of vogue and it isn't as cool and you don't see as many people working on it in their classes?
Well, yes, I really don't have a lot of intimate knowledge as far as some of these other guys. I mean, just on the surface. It definitely depends on the shooter. I mean, I think the problem is a lot of people that haven't mastered the fundamentals, they get bored with them, so they start to be looking elsewhere and delving into more issues that maybe they shouldn't get into so much until they learn the fundamentals. It's an interesting question, though. I don't know how to answer it much any better than that. When I'm teaching somebody, I tell them what they need to do if they want to master the fundamentals. It's not like they're going to come out in 1 or 2 days and just walk away that much better of a shooter. You know, they have to teach themselves to do that.
Right.
And I stress that first and foremost, you have to learn to do that really before you start worrying about some of this other stuff. So it's there's just so many different things to learn. Whether you're competing or in one of the self-defense realm, there's so many different things to learn, and it's hard to just make sure somebody learns this before they move on to this. So it's always a mixture.
Okay. And that actually gets us to the next question that I wanted to ask you. Do you have a diagnostic that you use at all with your students, or is there a point that someone's reached where you kind of go in your head, okay, they've got a grasp of what's going on and I can move on to the next phase?
Well, for the most part, it's trigger control. I mean, if we can go out and do a number of different exercises and have the student not have the issue of doing the typical jerking the trigger low and left on the target and get to the point where they really almost really never do that anymore, even when they're shooting at speed, that's when I consider them to have, for the most part, mastered the fundamentals.
Okay.
And then that's when I really want to focus more on some of the other, I guess, advanced things. But until then, I'm always stressing the the fundamentals. I use a lot of some of the targets that I use with maybe more like a no shoot on the bottom. So they're, instead of shooting at the whole target, they're shooting at half the target. And if they, they pull that shot down low, or sometimes they'll put the no shoot on the left. So if they shoot low and left at all, instead of just a little bit low and left on the target, it's actually tagging the no shoot. And that just really opens their eyes up a lot more and usually makes them concentrate more on doing what they need to do.
You mean Keanu Reeves was wrong and you're not supposed to shoot the hostage?
Yeah, I guess not.
Man, Hollywood has lied to me.
There's a TV show coming out with that in there, too. I just saw previews the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
Hollywood is awesome for gun handling skills. And
yeah, 99% of America is never going to know any difference, so I don't think that's probably going to change.
Yeah, everyone should just quit listening and go watch Speed. I mean, that's, you'll learn just as much from that as you will from... No, I'm lying. Don't change the station yet. I got a couple more questions, actually, Robert, but we're getting ready to come up on commercial. Do you mind holding them? We'll get to them in the next segment.
Sure.
Perfect.
Sure.
So you hear this a lot. Competition shooting, great training, or will gamer habits get you killed in the street, like the interweb says? We'll ask Robert Vogel when we get back. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Hey, it's Brian Thomas, Monday on the morning show. Of course, 7:05, Dad will be venting his spleen. We'll find out together what's on his mind. Tune in, 55 KRCD Talk Station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRCD Talk Station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We are talking with Robert Vogel about competition shooting, whether or not it helps or hurts skills one would use to defend ourselves. If you have any questions, you can call us at 749-5500. Or 1-800-823-8255. We'll try and take your calls at the end of the evening if we are able to. And you can really tell when I went to high school just based off of the music that plays when we're coming back from the break. So that was brackish for anyone that cares. We're on the line with Mr. Robert Vogel. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Perfect. So Robert is a police officer and also a world-class competitive shooter. We kind of... briefly kind of teased it a little bit before the break, but I'm curious, Robert, I've had people on the show that are very well thought of and that have a lot of excellent points, but kind of think competition shooting is a really bad thing to do as far as self-defense goes, or at least kind of insinuate that. And then I've had other people that think competition shooting is great as far as practicing for possible self-defense scenario. What's your position on that?
I mean, I guess I'm probably a little biased because of my background, but I think it's the vast majority of it is a positive. I just, as far as bad habits, and since we'll bring that up, I just really don't see that a whole lot. I think the vast majority of it is the skill that you learn. I've yet to have anybody really point out any particular instances, oh, well, this guy did this and he got killed because, you know, he did this in competition. I think there's a lot of tactical cliches that excuse poor performance. And I think that's really what it kind of comes down to. I'm trying to think of how to condense this because I could probably talk about it for an hour.
Yeah, we got another 9 minutes before we go to break. So.
Yeah. Now, I think competition, for the most part, the biggest benefit of that is it teaches you to perform with a gun in your hand under pressure and under stress. And there's just very few ways to really duplicate that. Okay. Even in a lot of law enforcement training, you know, FATS training, sim munitions, all that stuff. And that's great, and that's good training, but even then, you don't have a real gun in your hand.
Right.
Even in the a lot of the SWAT schools and things I went to like that, when it came down to really creating pressure, for having me perform under pressure, it turned into some kind of a competition, actually, with people watching you.
Right.
And I just, for the most part, the bad habits things, yes, there are some people, there are some sadistic shooters, whatnot, that they only do that for the gaming aspect. And, you know, they have no thought to self-defense, to anything along those lines. And so if they were to find themselves in a gunfight or in a shootout, they may not be the most prepared. But I don't think that is because of anything they're physically doing. I think that's because of what they have in their mind. I think it really comes down to that, your mental fortitude, your fighting spirit, what you have, and how you think in your mind is what's the most important thing, and not so much what you actually do, as long as you would have the skills in the first place.
Okay.
So, and most people that I know of, they're really not competition. Either fall into one or two categories or both. Either they're not a very good shooter, or they've never tried competition, or both.
Okay.
So that's just kind of how I see it.
Well, no, that's why I asked. I wanted to get your opinion on it. So that's kind of the nice thing about the show, is I sort of let people get on and, you know, talk about what they want to talk about, and I get to ask questions to try and draw it out a little further. So, and we kind of brought this up, but I mean, you've been a police officer for a while, so I mean, you're not just a competition shooter. You've gotten to deal with stressful situations and seen some benefits to it, correct?
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I know it just comes down to how you perform under pressure, and if you're used to doing that, you're going to do well. If you're not, you're going to fall apart. It always takes me back to when I went through the 2-week long firearm instructor course for the state of Ohio, and there was 20-some guys, and also some pretty good shooters for the best shooters in their department. And for 2 weeks, we're on the line, static shooting, doing the typical stuff. And at the end, I never forget, the 3 or 4 instructors come out, and they're like, okay, we're going to really put you guys under some pressure, under some stress. So they set up the field course with a lot of steel, and they brought chairs in, and everybody had to sit down. Everybody came, and one at a time, you went up there by yourself. It's the only time you really shot by yourself in front of everybody else with the timer and everything, and people just, they really kind of fell apart, a lot of people. I mean, I saw these people shoot all week long for 2 weeks, and they're put under this situation, and they just, boy, they couldn't, you know, it was pretty sad to watch. But at the same time, I mean, I'm there, and I'm like, you know, this is what I'm used to doing. I just, you know, fell right into it. So
right.
That's the one thing that really stands out to me.
I guess just learning to get out of your own way is kind of an important thing that you can pick up from it. So
yeah, just learning how to operate outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah,
that's what it all comes down to. That and confidence.
Okay. I mean, and you kind of already hit this, but you know, just to ask again. I mean, so that's pretty much where you're at as far as the bias against it in self defense circles, or you know, well, that's all well and good, but it wouldn't work on the street. That's
It really comes down to everything's circumstantial. I mean, I'm not trying to knock tactics here. I've got some training, some experience, but it's very circumstantial. It's very subjective. Nobody can – these guys are arguing this is better, this is better. There's no way to prove this is better, that's better. Everything depends on what's happening. So that's why some people, you know, tend to go toward a tactics thing and knock the shooting, when shooting is not subjective. Okay, let's measure accuracy and speed. Take any kind of gaming aspect out of it, and let's see who's better. Let's see whose technique works better. And it's very, very black and white there.
Right.
And people that are lacking in that regard kind of want to skate around it sometimes and go more into the other realm where they can always argue and they can't be proven wrong because it's so subjective.
Well, yeah, and I guess, and not to sound silly, and I'll say this one thing, and then Jim's got a question. A gunfight's kind of like a snowflake. There's only one of them, and they're all unique. And yeah, they're both, yeah, my co-hosts,
yeah,
are just kind of looking at me like, oh God. Anyway, Jim, your question.
Robert, take the opposite side on the question about competition. Do you ever see? Did you ever see among your fellow officers the tendency of the competitors to more quickly engage in gunfire, gunplay, than the non-competitors? In other words, does the enhanced skill set ever lead you to employ the firearm quicker than somebody else might?
I think nothing that I personally saw myself. I think that's an issue of just how well somebody performs in under stress. I mean, I was in a number of different fights and things like this. I'm not talking gunfights, but
sure,
just tense situations, wrestling with people. One guy had a knife, this and that, and it's just, some people are just better at doing that than others. They can just think quickly, and some of that, honestly, in my opinion, it's just how people are made up, not even so much to do with training. Now, training is a lot of it, but to think that if somebody that's used to shooting, that shoots fast, and they're a good shooter, would be more apt to pull the trigger than some guy that's not, I really don't see that, because I think that's just an issue that rests more on what they have in their brain and how they think, rather than, again, physically shooting. I do think that once the shooting starts, I think people will be more apt to continue to shoot. I know when I did the FATS program, that's one difference that I did when I started shooting at some of these guys. I tended to shoot until they went down. A lot of times, maybe 8 or 10 shots in a second and a half, and I shot 8 or 10 times until they were down, whereas other guys shot 1 or 2 rounds and stopped and waited. And that could be right or wrong depending on the situation.
Right. I've actually seen a lot of that in some of the training venues I've been at, and just some of my own personal experimentation with that. you get in the habit almost of, well, I'm going to run this double tap, bunny ears there, and one of the head, and then I'm going to assess or whatever. Well, you know, and then you see videos of guys doing that, and it doesn't always seem to work out for the best.
Yeah, every situation is very different. And back to the bad habits, I can mention one thing real quick here. Just like with the, a lot of what gets brought up is the cover issue. Okay, and then Nipsic, you're doing this, you're using these in cover. You know, just thinking to playing paintball or doing the simunitions. I mean, granted, you know you're not going to die, but it still hurt. I've never felt to not use cover. It's always came to me naturally, and along with a lot of other guys that I know. You know, you're being shot at, oh, you know, get back here, behind cover, do this, and it's something that I think will come natural to a lot of people if they can think correctly and perform under pressure.
Yeah, it's man, those sting. So I'm not looking forward to going to ECQC. I've heard a lot of stories of guns getting taken away from people and simunitions going sensitive places.
Yeah.
Real quick, we got about 30 seconds, Robert. Any advice for the shooters that just want to get better at playing the game, that don't care about self-defense and are just...
Well, I mean, if you just want to get better at playing the game, you don't really care about the defensive aspect of it. I mean, you got to get out there and you got to play the game. You got to watch the better shooters, get in there, get into competition, find the nuances, because there are things that will help you that don't necessarily help you other places. It's just like anything else. You got to know the rules.
Yeah.
You got to know the rules.
And that's... that actually brings up another question that I wanted to ask about the new IDPA rule book, but I'll get to that next segment if we have time. After the break, Robert's going to be answering your questions. If you have any, if not, you get to hear me talk about snowflakes and other stupid things. You can call us at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. You are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. If you have any questions for Robert Vogel, you can call us at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. I've got a couple folks on the line, so I'll try and get to all your calls as I can. Robert, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. Wow, I got scared there. Oh, no, not again. No, that's fine. So we've got a couple callers on the line. I'll get to them in 1 second. Just real quick, the new IDPA rule book, for it or against it, or do you still wish they had made some different changes?
Honestly, I haven't even read it. I have just heard people talk about it. People complain about this or that. I don't think as a whole that much has changed where it's really going to affect the game or too much. So,
yeah.
To be honest, for me, I'm not that concerned about it.
Okay. I just, someone asked me to ask you, so I thought I would ask you since I had you on the line.
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple specific instances of it, and it, you know, one way or another, but yeah, as a whole, I don't think really a whole lot has changed, and it is what it is. But.
Cool. All right. Do you mind taking a call or two?
Sure.
Perfect. We've got Kevin from Dayton on the line. He's got a question. Let's see if I can get him on the line here. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. What's your question, sir?
Just a real quick question for Robert. As part of the aging process, once you start getting in your 60s and stuff, and you develop some hand tremors, any words of advice on handling the gun to still try to be somewhat of a proficient shooter, or are you just too old to shoot anymore? I'm curious on that.
Well, I wouldn't say you're too old. I mean, people struggle when people get past in their 40s, 50s, usually have some issues with the eyes and some arthritis and things like that. I mean, I can't speak from experience on that. I wish I could. I'm 31, so I've never had any issues like that yet. But just going through it and doing what you can do. And there's a lot of guys out there that are in their 60s that are shooting. So I would definitely never say that you're too old to do it. Are you going to be at a level where you could be when you were younger? No, but you know, you make the most of it and do what you can do.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much, Kevin, for calling in. I appreciate you listening to the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see what else we have here. I've got two other callers on the line. Ronnie, I'm going to get to your call after the show's over, if that's all right with you. If you just hold the line, I'll answer your question off air. We do have Jerry from Florence. Let's see. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I'd like to ask Robert regarding the trigger pull, your forefinger trigger pull. What is the most effective pull system? A full curl with your forefinger, or maybe just the first joint of the forefinger around the trigger?
Well, so much of it depends on the gun and the size of your hand, for one thing. And obviously the most important part is to be able to have the whole trigger press, break the shot, have the shot go off, and not move the sights. And what it takes to do that, it differs a lot. You know, when I shoot my hand size, which is average to a little bit longer side than my fingers, and I shoot a Glock 940, so when I do that, my finger is a little more towards the tip on the trigger. And that's, for me, that's the placement it needs to be in order to work the trigger back and forth and keep the sights on the target. But, you know, the easiest way to find that out is take that whatever gun you're shooting, point it at a wall at a certain spot, work that trigger back and forth. Even though the trigger's not moving, move your finger back and forth in the same motion that you would when you're really shooting, and watch those sights. And experiment with where you put your foot finger on the trigger, and experiment with different things until you get to the point where you find where you need to be to have at least amount of trigger movement, or at least amount of sight movement. So, again, because it can depends on so many different things, it's something everybody has to figure out for themselves.
And just to be clear, too, and I'm sure this is what Robert meant, make sure your gun's unloaded when you're doing your dry fire practice, just so you don't have to fix any holes in anything that you don't want to put any holes
in. Yeah, I'll buy that.
Yeah,
so. Hey, you got a great show. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jerry, for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, Ronnie, I'll get to your call after we are off the air. If anyone else has any questions for Robert, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Right now, you can probably get in and talk to him if you would like to. So I guess we'll switch gears here a little bit. You offer sure. private lessons. You also teach classes as well. What's the best way to get a hold of you and work out a way to take some instruction from you?
Really just through my website. It's VogelDynamics.com, or if you just Google my name, Robert Vogel, or anything close to that, it usually comes up first. And there's a training page on my website that has my contact information. It has information about my private classes, which are at my place near St. Mary's, Ohio. And then it also has a list of the larger classes that I do abroad, which are most of those are out of state, really kind of all over the United States. So if one of those fits, then, you know, get my email, my contact in there, and get a hold of me, and I'll get back with you and, you know, do what I can to set something up.
Well, that's and I can't help but say, too, that I was very surprised as far as the rates go for private instruction. Extremely reasonable. If you'd like to, you can explain the breakdown on that. St. Mary's is only about 2 hours from Cincinnati, even closer from Dayton, mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy to get up there and take a class. How much does it run generally?
The private class is what you mentioned. It's $600 a day, and that's for one or two people. So a lot of people, they find a buddy, and then it's $300 a day each for two people. So it's a little more reasonable there. And I think it goes up a little bit for three and four people. But I actually have a range at my residence. So I live out in the country yet, and I've got my own horseshoe bay with a lot of steel and everything out there, pretty much everything you can find at a range. So I don't have to travel. I don't have to pack my truck up and drive half an hour away to the range or whatnot. But so I do a decent amount of those. And, you know, it all depends on what somebody wants to work on. I mean, some people are more toward competition, IDPA only, USPSA, or both. Some people don't shoot competition, but they're more in the law enforcement military realm. Just want to learn how to shoot better, because that really goes across the board. The shooting skills we're trying to learn, you're trying to shoot a real handgun fast and accurately at a human-sized target under a variety of circumstances, and that really applies to almost everything, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for folks that are not, you know, I was called a training junkie a month or so ago by someone, and I guess if the shoe fits or the flip-flop fits, whatever. For those that aren't in the know, though, well, that could be a tongue twister, $600 for, you know, $300 a person for an entire day of private instruction, that's an incredible deal. And that's, you know, I'm sure Robert's not going to say so on air because he doesn't need to. But for folks that don't know, that's crazy. I mean, that's a crazy good deal. Jim and Andy were both kind of like, ooh. So,
Robert will be calling.
Yes. So I guess what's next for you, Robert? I mean, do you've got any competitions coming up that you're looking forward to? Or what are your next goals?
I mean, as far as my short-term, long-term, I mean, short-term, I've got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm going almost every weekend, some other state here and there, a lot of nationals here in September, October. But, you know, just left the PD a little over a year ago, so I'm just trying to build things. A lot of training, that's most of it. But then I've got some sponsors that support me when I shoot matches and I hit the circuit, hit all the big matches, trying to make the world team again for the IPSC World Shoot next year. And writing some magazines for some articles, just trying to get out there, you know, doing things like this. I'm trying to get out there as much as I can every time I get an opportunity, and I'll try to jump on it and just kind of see where it leads me. So well,
makes a lot of sense.
Hey, Robert, we know what you carry or shoot in competition. Would you violate any of your sponsor agreements to tell us what your primary daily carry is?
Sure. No, not at all. Really kind of comes down to two guns. You know, on the smaller end of it, I do have a J-Frame Smith & Wesson. It's a 340 PD.
Who doesn't?
12-ounce. Yeah, 12-ounce 357. And honestly, I just carry that in my hip pocket a lot of times. What I like about that is you can walk around a gun actually in my hand nonchalantly with my hands in my pocket. If I take a timer out, I can go from seeing me with my hands in my pocket to first shot in 0.5. Not to say that I would really want to do that, but I like that part of it. And I can walk around with a T-shirt on and not have to worry too much about concealing. On the other side, honestly, I've got a Glock 35, and that's a big gun, but when I wear an overcoat or an inside-the-waistband holster, I've got a number of different holsters that I carry with that. A lot of times that's what I carry, and it doesn't really bother me. It's versus a 17 or 22, which is about three-quarters of an inch shorter. It really doesn't make any difference in how that feels, so I just go ahead and carry that larger gun. It's the same gun that I won my first national championship with in 2007. It's the same gun I carried on the SWAT team for quite a few years when I was on it before I left full-time. So kind of a little bit attached to that.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, hey, Robert, I really appreciate you coming on the show this evening. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. It goes really quick, but thank you again.
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, it did go pretty quick, and I'm like, wow, it's just already over already.
But, oh, I know. I've had a couple people say that is the quickest 5-minute hour I've ever experienced. So, hey, you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, Robert, and I will certainly be in touch. So,
okay, all right.
Thank you. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, next week I'm going to be in Memphis taking Tom Givens' instructor development course. So Jim and Andy are going to be hosting the show. They'll be taking your calls, talking about some upcoming legislation, as well as asking me how training went, and it'll either have been good or bad. But anyway, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Like I said, I'm giving away some P-Mags on there. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe, and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m. right here on 55KRC, the talk station.